Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. It's fair to say after a period of very mild weather, the cold has started to kick in and the forecast is actually for a very wet west of Ireland next week compared to a very dry forecast for the east. Shout out to our supporters Grassland Agro for helping us to make this show happen. Later in the program, we'll hear from Grassland's John O'Loughlin. As normal, to start, I have quick fire questions for Adam, Darren, and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. We like to have your queries every week. Adam, I've one quick fire one for you here this week. Ask Adam. This is there talk of new suckler schemes. Can Adam just explain what schemes are coming and when? Adam, talk to me.
Yeah, Jack, so we've two main suckler schemes there on the suckler side of the house. We've the suckler carbon efficiency program. That's the big one, and that's the replacement for BDGP. And that's going to be paid out at a rate of 190 a cow for the first 10 cows and 120 a cow thereafter. And there's a similar requirements in that scheme of BDGP. It's going to be a higher, we'll say target for the four and five star cows, 75% four and five star by the end of that scheme. And then the other one is the BPS or a replacement for BPS. That's going to come in at 90 and 70 for that scheme. As of yet, we don't know the specific requirements of that. But yeah, there's 240 a cow for the first 10 cows and 190 after that.
Okay, and tell me, Adam, have we time and when are guys applying for these now?
So usually it's in the springtime. We understand that it's around March time for the SCEPs or the suckler carbon efficiency program, and you know BPS would have been around the same time as that in other years. So we're expecting similar application dates for next year.
Okay, that was for the bonus marks. Darren, one quick fire for you. Ask Darren. Is there a chance if the thresholds for eco schemes using Space for Nature could change in future years? Right, Darren, go handy on this one now in terms of give me a bit of context for this for in terms of some people will know what we're talking about here in terms of using Space for Nature for eco schemes. So just give me a little bit of background.
Yeah, so where this is coming from, Jack, is coming from our CAP information meetings. And in particular, it was a hot topic in Tuam last week, where a lot of farmers, or sorry, the department stated that over 90% of farmers would satisfy eco schemes by Space for Nature. Essentially, that farmers had over 10% of their farms designated with having landscape features such as scrub, hedgerows, drains, ditches, all of that type of thing, met up over 10% of the farms, and they didn't have to do anything from an eco scheme perspective.
Okay.
Where this is coming into play is that the department has said is that down the line it could bring a bit of pressure because the CAP sort of program would have envisaged having, I suppose, a more balanced eco scheme and measures across farms. And if 90% farmers are getting away with two eco schemes, it could bring a bit of pressure. That's where that question, I'd say, is coming from.
Okay, so the answer is yes. Ask Darren if there's a chance, and the answer is yes, there is a chance, according to what you've heard from the department. Thanks, Darren. Back to you in a bit. Aidan, one quick for you, Aidan. It came in on the email. Just want to ask Aidan, if it was possible to have calves contract reared out from 2 weeks to between 10 or 12 weeks, depending on reaching target weaned weight, and get them back then, what would be involved, inputs, etc., and how much a day would it cost to rear them? So a good bit in that, Aidan, for a quick fire, but is it possible, and give me a rough ballpark on costs?
Yeah, so it's definitely possible. There are farmers doing this, Jack, but I suppose they're doing it as part of a longer-term contract rearing arrangement, as in the calves aren't coming back as soon as they're weaned, you know. So they're doing this for a year or a year and a half or 18 months, whatever the deal is. There is extra cost for that rearing period. That's the high money period when those calves have to be fed milk or milk replacer. If they're going to contract rear, it's going to be milk replacer. That's gone up a lot in price. A bag of milk replacer is now around 70 euros, which means, per kilo, that's a 20-kilo bag. So per kilo, it's about €3.50, and most of those heifers would be up to a kilo of powder per day. So it could be up to €3 or €3.50 per day on milk powder alone. Leave aside the cost of feeding them in terms of labor, straw, having the shed, bedding, all the rest, sickness, caring for them, time. You know, the reason the farmers are contra-rearing their heifers is to reduce the time and the effort with them, you know, during this intensive rearing period. So you'd be talking north of 350 per day anyway, I put it that way. So work out yourself what the sums are going to be.
100%. That's fair enough. That's enough of information to work on for that person. Thanks for that. Back to you in a minute. Adam, I see you're going big on beef price this week, and effectively, I suppose, putting it up to the factories or using the information that's available to you in terms of global prices, putting it up to the factories that, listen, there's a beef price rise needed here.
Yeah, Jack, if we look around the world, I suppose you we're looking at sort of French beef prices up at sort of 570 a kilo, Polish beef prices up at 523, and even, you know, South American, Argentinian beef price this week is 14 cent ahead of the Irish beef price. And look, speaking to farmers this week, there's massive frustration out there that given the hoops, I guess, finishers jumped through here as regards Origin Green and Board B quality assurance and you know, pitching ourselves in at that high end of the market. And here we are with a Polish beef price well ahead of the Irish beef price and Argentinian beef price as well. Like it's massively frustrating from a beef finishing point of view. And if you look around the world, look at America, Jack, the big exporting countries, they're all racing ahead as regards, you know, tight supply, big demand. But factories here seem to be able to keep their foot on things over the last number of weeks. There is a bit of a move there in the last week or so with a price, you know, maybe 5-10 cents, but we should be a long way off that. If we look at the Board B, you know, price tracker, that's looking at the beef that we're selling into our markets, main markets, you know, UK and EU markets, we're 50 cents behind that. So there's 50 cents going to loss there between a farmer selling it and where it's getting into those markets.
And of course, there's some buyers. Like, I mean, isn't ABP big in Poland, Adam? Like, I mean, they're buying cattle there, so they're buying cattle in Ireland at one price, buying cattle in Poland at another price. There's a big differential there, and I would say, you know, without having studied in depth, but I know from the dairy side, I suppose the whole system of producing cattle in Ireland will be a lot more expensive here in Ireland than it is in Poland.
Oh, absolutely. They're not near as advanced, I guess, Jack. It's a lot maybe more underdeveloped of a beef production system over there. And the costs, I'd say, would be a lot lower in terms of a Polish beef production system as opposed to the costs we're seeing here. So really, farmers, you know, look, we've done the budget, Jack. We talked about it before, €6 a kilo. We're a long, long way off that. There is a little bit of light on the horizon in terms of seeing that, you know, that Christmas demand. We're seeing, you know, prime cattle kill drop 2,000 there in the last 2 weeks. So we're coming into a big time for retail demand. Like, if you take that sort of 30-day dry age stuff, you know, that needs to be on the shelf, we'll say, second week of December. So we're in the second week, third week of November now. So that has to be killed in the next 2 weeks to get it on the shelf in time. We're also seeing a World Cup we'll say, lift there as well. You know, World Cup starting next week. You know, there'll be a lot of people eating out, a lot of people dining out over that time. And we're seeing a big drive from manufacturing beef demand. You know, cow kill, a record cow kill, the highest cow kill last week since 2004. And that's on the back of really good demand. And we're seeing in March, talking to market managers, you know, dry cows, cull cows, a really good trade. So that shows you, even with the kill going up to a record kill and price holding, that shows you there's a really good demand there for manufacturing beef.
And so, again, to take that on, Adam, like that's saying that the factories are willing to pay more for cull cows and for the kind of, I'll call it that, where they're not looking for the prime cuts. They're, you know, and they're able to get it at the moment in terms of cows and paying a bit more for cows rather than lifting the kind of base price. Is that what you're kind of reading?
Yeah, absolutely. Young cows this week, Jack, I know people getting 450, 460 for you know, cows, young cows this week for good, you know, suckler bred cows. If you take a prime, maybe, you know, O minus, you know, we'll say Angus, or, you know, you're down at that sort of level as well. So there isn't that much difference between that top quality cow this week and the prime, you know, retail spec.
And Adam, like, I mean, it's fair to say we've talked about the World Cup as being a driver in the past, like, but it's been a kind of at a different time of the year. It's very unusual to be talking about a World Cup here in the middle of November when things are getting cold here, you know, the kind of way, and across Europe, like, obviously, you know, it's I wonder, will it have the same effect in terms of consumption and that kind of thing, given the kind of time difference, like it?
Yeah, I'd say the big thing is gathering, Jack. You know, like when you have a gathering of people, and when you have people, you know, there's such a culture now, we'll say, across Ireland and the UK. You know, a pub isn't a pub anymore. It's a dine out experience, we'll say, when you go to a pub. And I would imagine that you'll have big gatherings there, ordering food and ordering, you know, drinks as well. So it's a combination of both. And I'd say you definitely see, and look at on the back of what we're seeing this week, it's definitely coming.
Yeah, good job. I mean, just speaking of big prices, Adam, like that piece last week around that little Belgian blue crossbred heifer making 10,100, like, I mean, it's serious money. It's funny money. It's kind of can it be stacked up, like, or what's happening there, Adam?
Sure, look, it's hard to know, Jack. This is a really specialised outfit now. You know, it's almost taken the ordinary people out of this business as regards. You know, in the past, you might have got 2,000 or 3,000 for a top quality weanling, but if you have two people now for this would say show material heifer or show material bullock that'll hit shows, like this heifer was bought for shows next year, will probably have a good career. I suppose look at the chances are that it will have a really good career. And then
will that make money for it? That show
it won't, like, Jack. But I suppose in terms of building a profile for that heifer in terms of selling embryos, you know, like, you can get anywhere maybe from between 600 and 1,000 euros for an embryo there. You know, one flush of that heifer could get, if you're lucky, could get maybe 10, maybe 15 embryos. So you could have the money if everything goes right. But I suppose it's a massive risk. And look at it, maybe it's a bit of a hobby for people as well as regards, you know, getting young people involved. And I know you might say it's expensive, but look at it, it's still very good to see those top quality animals. And look, she wasn't the only one. Those 6,000, those 7,000, those 5,000, there was lots of big money up there. And you might say it's a blip, but we've seen that over the last couple of years, Jack. There was 150 animals up there and a real dinger of a trade. You'll see the very same in Carrick-on-Shannon now in 2 weeks' time. There's 450 animals entered for Carrick-on-Shannon for the winter fair next Saturday week. And we'll see big prices there as well. So look, it's a little industry on its own, but it's going really, really well.
How this farmer or can get that money back from kind of, you know,
I don't know. It's all about market demand, Jack. It's about supply and demand, you know, in terms of if we have seen, right, in Carrick-on-Shannon over the last number of years, the bull calves aren't near as good a trade, I guess, as the heifers. Everybody wants that breeding heifer. Everybody wants to breed the next generation of show cattle. It doesn't always work out like that. And obviously, we know without semen, you're talking 50% male, 50% female. So there is a definite premium there for females. And how long that'll last, I suppose, will the market become oversaturated with them? Possibly it will, but it's not everybody's game either. It's a very difficult game to produce those show cattle, and it's not just as easy as it looks.
Would they be better off going off and get the Dexter for themselves?
we have this on the dealer this week, the Dexters and the Irish Miles and the Kerry Bog Ponies. They're seeing a bit of a resurgence. It's really doing what it says on the tin here for rare breeds. I know Darren was saying during the week that I think there's 75 applications for the Irish Mile Society, more than they had last year in the last couple of weeks. And Dexter's a big sale coming up in Raphoe. It'll be interesting to see how that goes on Friday night, but I'm hearing huge demand out there in the country for rare breeds. And that, look, this is to do with acres and getting into acres. If you have a rare breed on your farm, you get in as tier one priority access. So it's definitely helping those smaller breeds.
I had a man come up to me after the meeting there in Cavan, in your home country, in Coot Hill there the other night, and he said, ah, japers, he says, you couldn't keep them rare breeds in the field, he says, like, you know what I mean, they'd be gone from one parish to the next, he says, and they're cross little beggars, he said, like, you know what I mean, he's adamant on it, like, you know what I mean, not at all.
Yeah, some of them can be, I've heard a few stories on that, all right, yeah, but yeah. But look, I suppose, if you're guaranteeing yourself 6,000 or 7,000, maybe you deal with a little bit of that in terms of bringing in that money onto the farm.
Absolutely. Talk to me. I'm going to talk to Aidan in a minute about he's a piece there, I suppose, on the changes to the index in terms of the EBI, and I suppose the greening of the EBI in effect. Like, I mean, the beef side of that, the dairy beef side of that, in terms of what changes are, what the impact will be, Adam, from a kind of a beef side. What's your line?
Actually, look, Jack, I'd say Aidan will be a lot more positive towards it than maybe the me in terms of looking at what the effect this is going to have on the dairy beef. I suppose, look, we've had this argument loads of times about the struggles that we have on the dairy beef side of the house in terms of quality calves coming to the dairy herd. I don't think this is going to do anything for in terms of quality calves. I suppose it's looking at a lighter cow. You know, carcass weight is a highly heritable trait. You take 50% of the genetics from the sire, you take 50% of the genetics from the cow. If the cow is lighter, the progeny is going to be lighter. And that's an issue we have in terms of those lighter, you know, animals coming to finish. We're having problems, you know, making money at them. And I suppose even with lighter calves coming off those cows, is there going to be issues selling them? Are beef farmers going to buy them? So, look, I know there's some corrections in there, but I don't think it's enough. And the beef merit or the beef element of the EBI has moved from an 8% allocation to 10%. But in terms of carcass weight, it's not going to stop that decline in carcass weight. And I'd be worried about where we're going with. And I know, look, you might say you're a beef man. What does it do with you with cow type? And how dare you talk about cow type to a dairy farmer? But the reality is that 60% of our beef now is coming from the dairy herd, and beef farmers have to deal with that. So it's a huge challenge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And of course, as we've always said, a lot of dairy farmers keep their own calves, so they have to deal with it as well. So it's a kind of one of these pieces that's crossing across both sectors. Adam, I'll leave you on this. Another busy weekend coming up for sales. You're getting into big kind of big time of the year for big sales.
Yeah, we've a big shorthorn sale on Roscommon. Shannon's up there on Saturday in terms of the premier shorthorn society sales. A lot of heifers for that, and there's a few bulls for it as well. And we've also a big Hereford sale at the weekend as well. It's the genetic gems, they call it. Big stuff here, and a lot of really good cattle going up there. A couple of sheep sales at the weekend as well. So it's another busy weekend on Pedigree.
Rock and roll. Thanks, Adam. Talk to you next week. Darren, to start with you in terms of, like, as I mentioned there with Adam, we were on the CAP meeting roadshow again this week. We were in Coot Hill and we're in Kerry now this coming week, Wednesday the 23rd in Tralee in the Rose Hotel. I mean, did we learn in terms of there was some talk of acres at the Coot Hill meeting in terms of, you know, a lot of farmers saying, listen, there's a lot of farmers not going to get into this tranche of acres. And the department man said that applications will open next summer, summer 2023, for another tranche of acres. Did we learn anything else on the acres job, Darren?
No, I suppose, look, at the other one, Jack, that had been said, and I think this was sort of mentioned at some of the other meetings, is that the department have been instructed by the minister to look at other options as of what could possibly be a bridging sort of gap. Now, I'm not sure what exactly that would compromise
of. Could that mean they'd get another year off their old scheme in effect there?
I don't know, Jack, because I don't know what arrangements would need to be there from an EU perspective, say, to approve. And then also you'd have the sort, I suppose, maybe the sort of complications of whether people who got into acres, would they say, I wouldn't bother going into acres if I thought I could have got another glass scheme. So I'm not sure what the department are thinking of. Like, one of the things that worked as a transitional arrangement was the REAP program, or the results-based environment agri plan, which was in play last year and this year. Now, that had just a couple of measures in place, but it gave farmers an agri-environmental payment. Now, I don't know whether something like that could be turned around quickly. I'd say the department in that section are probably so focused with acres at the moment, and getting a chance probably to lift their head above that, is that they're probably, I'd say, a lot of the discussions on this will come after the 7th of December when they can say, right, we have the first tranche done. Let's see now what we can do, and let's see what options are available to us here.
It came up in Coot Hill, Darren, that we on some of the case studies, I mean, you were putting in maybe 2,500, 3,000, 4,000 as maybe the net payment from the acre scheme. Some of the consultants, I remember, or Tom Canning said it obviously publicly at the meeting in Coot Hill, that some of his clients are maybe getting in for a lot more, and maybe getting kind of 6,000 and 7,000, getting up closer to kind of the top end of the acres payment. Did I pick that up properly?
No, I suppose. Look, Tom said that his average payment is 5,000, and he said that would be maybe broadly in line with, say, the glass plans that he would have put in, or maybe slightly higher. But he said, look, at some of the case studies we had them in 4.5, 5, 4, 7 sort of. Adam had one in there, I think, that you referred to, maybe 2.5 or 3.
Okay.
Like, on paper, Jack, I could go in and I could plan a plan there for you now, and I could get 7,000. But I suppose, to bring it back to Tom's point, it was real money. So, and I think this is where a lot of farmers need to focus on. So he said that in Cavan, Cavan, Monaghan, Leitrim, up that side, there's a lot of water courses, and the riparian zone was a very popular option up there. Now, we touched on it briefly before. Essentially, a riparian zone is, if you have a water course along by a plot of land, and if that land is designated as rank 1, 2, or 3, as a phosphorus, or say pollution index, or pit maps is what they're called. Now, look, at your advisor will be able to tell you straight away that there's a payment of up to 1,530 euros per hectare on that. 2 hectares can go in first. Now, you have to leave it fenced off leave it idle for the 5 years. You can cut it once after the 31st of August, or top it, or you can remove the toppings if you want, whatever, you could bale silage. But that is a common one, because farmers can get 3,000. And there's another one there that is also quite common, and Tom mentioned it as well, is this in the previous, or sorry, I won't say previous glass scheme, in the current glass scheme, wild bird cover had a payment of 13 euros a hectare. Some farmers are now, where it suits, putting that into, say, the riparian arable, in that you can put in a grass crop that's made up of 40% coxfoot and a few other species, and leave that for the 5 years, come in again and cut it. And I suppose the difference of why farmers are doing that is that they don't have the cost of coming in and ploughing or tilling seed for your wild bird cover. And if they get that established, it's only a matter of topping or mulching once a year. That has a payment of over 1,200 euros. And the other area where he was getting, say, the payment is, he said a lot of farmers were able to pick up the 8 hectares of extensively grazed pasture, which is 2,000. And he said he's not finding a lot of farmers going into low input grassland, but there is some, and they might have a hectare or two, and that was a payment anywhere from, that's a results-based, anywhere from 250 to 450 if you were to go for the late meadow cutting option on it.
Okay. I mean, there was, a further query on the riparian zones, where someone asked where water wasn't on the ag food map that he had seen, and he was asking the question, he or she, I forget what it was asking the question, could they still go with a buffer zone or a riparian zone, even though it wasn't marked on the ag food map?
Yeah, and that's a regular question. Like, we covered a bit on riparian, I think it must be 3 weeks ago. You have me thinking now, actually, I must get it up online on the carousel at the weekend, or tomorrow or Sunday. But there was a question in that to the department on what exactly constitutes a watercourse. Like, in the old rep scheme, there would have been a definition there that a water course had water running in it for 9 months of the year. The department haven't gone as specific as that. They've said that there has to be water in it for a large majority of the year for it to qualify, that it can't be a drain, say, that is dry for 9 months of the year and water runs in it during the deluges we have to get. But within reason, that if there's water running in it, that they'll take it into account. So okay, it doesn't have to be that marked on it. What I was sort of advising some farmers to do, Jack, is that if there is doubt around it, take some photos, or maybe get your advisor to take some of those geotagged photos, in that if you did happen to have an inspection down along the road, that you would have, or during the dry summer months, that you would have a bit of the clarity,
taking a few photos at different times throughout the year, kind of, you're saying. Exactly.
Just to know that there is some there, or to sort of document it yourself, like it'd help. It's not to say there mightn't still be a bit of conflict, but it definitely would help.
Yeah, but I think I got it. I picked it up from John Muldowney that he was willing to kind of, if it was a drain, it was a drain. And even if it wasn't marked, that listen, they would work with you. That's what I picked up. I just actually remember it was a Leitrim query. And I think he classified it as a bog type drain. I think is what he called it, you know. So, yeah, look what I mean. It is what Darren.
We have a few of those, Jack, around. We have a few of those around for IM2. And I know exactly the one because it's a sort of drain at this time of the year, like it's like a river, like, but now the water might be flowing or might seem to flow like a stream, but like then during a dry summer there, it can be cork dry, like that there might be a wrecks in it, but it is an area that does handle an awful lot of water this time of the year, and like the department would say that now is the time that the risk is of overland flow. So like if during the winter months there was a lot of water in that, well, that is, I suppose, the target offer to reduce the risk of phosphorus pollution.
Okay. Darren, we're obviously heading for Kerry the middle of next week, like Wednesday the 23rd down to Tralee. I mean, are you expecting anything different in like we started in Cork, we went to Carlow. I suppose we hit a lot of tillage ground in Carlow, a lot of tillage queries. We went to Tuam, then up to your home patch, and again there was a lot of queries. And there's a good few pages on that in the journal there this week for anyone that has interested in that space. A lot of reading there. And then we were in Coot Hill during the week. I expect nothing different in Kerry, I suppose. Like, I mean, you'd have a good range of soil types and commonages and hill types and flatlands. You'd have a big range again there at Kerry Limerick.
Yeah, I'd be expecting Kerry to be very similar to Cork in that you have a lot of intensive farmers, but you also have that mixture then of more extensive systems. So Cork was probably the broadest meeting I'd say we had in regards of a balance from farmers who are going to lose big to farmers who will see no change to farmers who are going to win. Yeah. And I think we're going to see that in Kerry, just judging by there is some very good, say, dairy holdings, some bigger dairy farms, there's some good beef finishing units, particularly some of those that will travel down maybe from South Limerick. And then coming in from West Kerry, you'll see more the sheep sort of commonage areas, even South Kerry, you'll see those sort of starting to come into effect. Yeah. And like, so as you say, very varied. Like, and the beauty of these meetings, what I have found, and even the departments, won't mind me saying this, but the department speakers have found is just a range of questions and to test the system and to see what is there. Because like I can sit in front of the computer, you can sit at it here and look at the CAP document and it's 700 odd pages. It's only when you get out on the ground and a farmer says, how does this work for me? And it shows up a different element. Like even say this week, we have a good bit in there around the scrub and the 50% eligibility. Like that's something that's, yes, was there, but we've teased it out a bit more over the last few meetings. And we could have big implications positively for farmers who have a lot of scrub land on their farm. It could bring more payments to them.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's kind of, as we distill it down and as we get behind and get under the bonnet of some of these queries, there's definitely kind of, as you say, new bits of information coming out. So, yeah, no, lots more to expect in Kerry in the coming week. Darren, I leave you on this in terms of the trade. If you just go back to the sheep for a second, leave the scheme there where they are in terms of the trade, up or down this week, is there any tightness in the market?
Up Jack, but frustratingly up. And the way I sort of describe that is slow to rise. Like this time last year, prices are well over €7 a kilo. We're after experiencing 2 or 3 weeks where prices are up anywhere from 50 to 70 cents. Prices are up 10 cents, I suppose, in the last week or base quotes. And the frustrating part about it is that there's probably sellers at the higher end of the market getting 15 to 20 cents more. And farmers trading through groups or in small numbers, they're frustrated at factories, say, maybe quoting 6.10, 6.15, but prices of 6.40, 6.50 going at the higher end of the market or even more as the week progresses. So I think that is just causing a small bit of sort of frustration among producer groups in particular.
Okay, 100%. Darren, excellent. Leave it at that. And as you say, if anyone wants to send in queries in advance of Kerry that are not going to be there on the night or whatever for one reason or another, you're always open to getting queries, Darren, dcarty@farmersjournal.ie, to kind of, if there's any queries, and we can put it to the department people on the night or get an answer for you.
Exactly.
Thanks, Darren. 100%. Chat to you next week. Aidan, I just touched off it there with Adam in terms of the I suppose the greening of the EBI, as I call it, like in terms of he's not convinced it's going to change much as far as the dairy beef element of it is concerned. Like you were at that meeting in Carn during the week. Talk to me about kind of, first of all, for someone that hasn't read the paper and whatever, just give me a kind of a line or two in terms of what change is happening.
Yeah, so there's a new sub-index being introduced into EBI. It's called the carbon subindex. It's going to make up 10% of the overall EBI. There's no real new traits being introduced into that except age at slaughter. That's the only new trait. So effectively, they've taken from some of the other traits, such as fertility, milk, and maintenance and beef, and put it into carbon subindex. So it's make up 10%. So the new trait then being introduced in the beef sub-index, and it's also in the carbon sub-index, is age at slaughter. So there's a big variation there with between all breeds in terms of their age at slaughter. So their carcass weight is the same, but it takes some animals within the same breed way longer, 30 days plus, in order to be fit for slaughter. So they're introducing this trait that's going to, you know, I suppose, incentivize farmers or incentivize the breeding program over time to breed animals that have a shorter age at slaughter, which would be good from a carbon point of view, because it means that those animals aren't hanging around as long when they're emitting methane. But it also would be good, I suppose, for the beef farmer in that those animals are gone earlier. They're not being fed, you know, 5-6 kilos a meal for 30 days longer than they need to be. So there's savings there in terms of costs on the beef side.
Okay, and we've talked to Declan obviously on this show a couple of times in terms of you know, his dairy beef type animals, the Angus, the Herefords, etc., and he's getting them away at kind of 18, 19, 20 months rather than hanging around for that second winter and the costs associated with that. Yeah. But Aidan, is it fair to say that the kind of the lack of information on the kind of methane in the kind of grazing system is a limitation to what ICBF are trying to do in this exercise at the moment?
Yeah, definitely. So Ross Evans, who's a geneticist there with ICBF, he spoke at this at Lent, looking at, you know, how we're going to get methane introduced as a direct trait. So the carbon subindex, you know, it's taken an amalgamation, as I said already, of other kind of traits. Mm. It's not a direct, you know, methane trait. So it's indirect. So methane itself is can be measured, and it is genetically different, you know, between different animals. So it's something that, you know, you can breed to have a lower methane animal. Massive challenge. Like he's saying 5 or 6 years time we could have it in. I know Andrew Comrie said previously 2 to 3 years. Some people in Chagos are saying it's more like 10 to 15 years. So it all depends on the data. He says the minimum number of cows they need to have measured the methane emissions from them is around 2,000. Now, there's 280 cows in Moorpark measured to date. I know there's some work going on in UCD. They have a lot of work on the beef side of stuff, you know, in Tully. Yeah. So Tully has indoors. Indoors, concentrate diets, you know. Yeah. So the issue I would see, and this is what the researchers are talking about, is, you know, how comparable is that indoor diet with, you know, 10, 12 kilos of concentrate versus the cow outside grazing, and how much methane she emits from that. A couple of interesting stuff there. He's on about these sniffer devices, you know, nothing to do with dogs now. So in Holland, they have 100 of these sniffer boxes put over robots. And as you know, every cow has to walk into the robot box to get milked.
Yeah.
And while she's in there, this is detecting her methane levels. Probably not that applicable in the Irish context, but it's, you know, maybe you can put into milking parlors or do something like that.
Those
green feed devices, those kind of, you see them there in photographs, or the cow stand, they're out the field, the cow stands into them, she gets a little bit of meal and it's measuring her methane. They cost 70,000 euros each. And there's a massive waiting list for them because all over the world is trying to, you know, replicate these kind of things. So it's a big challenge. Like, so it's, and then, you know, just how long, you know, how many, I'm saying, he's saying 2,000 as the minimum starting point before you get methane introduced as a direct trait. I would say you're probably closer to 10 years for that, like, to happen in any meaningful way.
And by the time 2030,
you know. Yeah. So we're gone past the deadline where we need to reduce our emissions by 25%.
Okay, I hear you. Yeah. So I suppose we're being flippant and saying that methane isn't, you know, but there is a job of work in terms of measuring the methane, in terms of getting the equipment, in terms of contextualizing that in an Irish system, in terms of measuring it in an Irish system at grass and all that kind of thing. Like there's a fair job of work in that piece of work on its own. Like, yeah.
There is, and it's only starting now, which is kind of, you know, I know we have carbon introduced as a sub-index, but like the impact it has on our overall emissions will be relatively small. I mean, I mentioned the, you know, 25% reduction in our agriculture's greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. Within that, you know, and that 25% is around 5.7 megatons. There are 5.4, I can't remember which. The contribution for genetics alone is 1.2 megatons. But this carbon index is going to add to 300 kilotons, if I'm right. Yeah. So, you know, it's 0.3 and we need to be at 1.2.
Yes, put it that
way.
Yeah.
So we're a long way off even with the carbon sub-index now being introduced. Yeah. Because really, it's not really changing the emphasis all that much.
Yeah. Have you any fears on it that it could take from the good work that the EBI has done in terms of fertility or improving milk solids, that you're further diluting and putting in another sub-index? What is there, 7 or 8 in sub-indexes now? Like, have you any fears for including this?
It's definitely going to reduce the emphasis on milk. So we know that. So the rate of gain in milk EBIs for, you know, the sub-index for milk was around €5 per year. With this new carbon, and now it's going to drop to €3 or €4 per year. So emphasis has gone off milk. And the reason for that is milk is, okay, it's a source of profit for farmers, but it's also a source of carbon. So if you produce milk, you're producing emissions. Same if you produce more beef, you're producing more emissions. So that's why there's emphasis gone off that. But fertility, there'll be more emphasis on fertility in this, with this new change, because not alone is there a standalone fertility sub-index, there's also a high proportion of fertility within the carbon sub-index. The reason for that is, if you've a better, a more fertile cow, she's going to last longer in the herd, so you don't need as many replacements. So rather than having a 25% replacement rate, you can have an 18 or 15% replacement rate. It means you're carrying less animals, there's less methane being produced.
Yeah. Okay. We've gone very technical, Aidan. We could have lost everyone at this stage. But yeah, in terms of it is, like, absolutely. And we'll come back to it, I'm sure, you know. But in terms of coming back to what's happening on the ground, like, is there still a few guys sneaking out for a bit of grass? Like, because there is grass down there, or out there, but some lads are telling me places are swimming, like, I mean, and they can't get out to it.
Yeah, so that's kind of, you know, look, I mean, at this stage, Jack, I'd say probably 80, 90% of farmers have given up on it. There is still that 10 or 15% or 20% of farmers that have grass remaining to graze. You know, they have farm covers of 800-900 kilos. And in some of those cases, just land is too wet, you just can't do it. You know, but they're still hoping, you know, holding out hope that they might get out, you know, they're getting out for 3 or 4 hours per day. In some of those cases, they're grazing the high covers because that's all that's left, and they have to graze them. You know, they can't carry these over the winter. Those covers are 2,000 on them. Because they're such high covers, the cows are in a small area. If they're in a 3 or 4 hour grazing period, you know, the utilization is very poor. It's slobbery, messy, difficult, you know, very challenging. Look, the East Coast is to be dry next week, as you said in the forecast. I would be more inclined to hold off and wait 2 or 3 days, you know, if you get 2 or 3 dry days together, where you can let off cows, and even if it's a case of letting off dry cows, and go hammer and tongs, get those off, let them out day and night, get as much of that graze as possible when conditions are good, and then call a halt to it. Like, you know, we're heading into late November now.
Yeah.
For me, the season is over in terms of grazing. Yeah. It's just a matter of getting those high covers off, so at least you're setting up the farm well for next spring.
Okay, I hear you. Like, and the forecast would suggest that maybe the east is going to get maybe a little bit of dry weather over the next 5-6 days, as much as they can tell, I suppose. As you, the west is, seems to be wall to wall rain there every day next.
Yeah,
next week,
and like, or... I mean, it's I suppose in the west, like, it's going to take a lot longer for the typical farm in the west to dry out anyway. So even a dry week at this stage won't make any odds to them, because they need 3 or 4 dry weeks together for the land to dry out. Whereas in the east coast, you know, many parts of the east coast are still very wet, but if given an opportunity to dry out, they would dry out, and damage would be minimized.
Yeah, you've a couple of pieces there this week talking about the frost and the cold. You must be expecting very cold weather, Aidan. Like, I mean, you're getting, I know you're, I'm joking, you're getting lads tuned up for winter ready.
Yeah, so now is the time for Jack. I mean, it's our focus this week is on winter ready, preparing for winter. So there's some nice little bits and pieces in there. I'm looking at generators in my own article. So again, you know, not only is there a risk of you know, storms causing a blackout, but now we have a risk of the grid not being able to perform as required and blackouts for that reason. So more farmers are interested in getting generators, probably a bit of free cash around dairy farms. It could be a good investment. And I'm looking now at these standalone generators. So were you familiar with the PTO ones, Jack? But these are standalone ones. You see them in building sites and industrial buildings. There's more interest in these now because they just mean less work. They trigger on straight away, automatic changeover switches. Cost a little bit more, but in the long run, there might be a better buy, you know, especially if there's labor around and larger farmers that mightn't have a tractor available or, you know, available to be set up. That's one option.
What are they costing, Aidan? What are they costing, you know, for that job, roughly? Should
there 10 or 15,000 is what I have in the piece. Like, but you can, you know, the sky's the limit. You can go 20, 25 if you want. Right. So these are a handy size entry level one with an automatic changeover switch. I think that's important because you don't want to be having to turn this thing on. And with that switch, then you can time it that they'll come on automatically every few weeks or, you know, for a few hours every week. So at least then it's keeping fresh. You know, the biggest problem with those PTO generators is if you don't need them, they're put away in the back of the shed and left there. And it's only when you need them then that you realize there's actually a problem with them, or the rats have gone through pipes or wires.
Correct. So, yeah. They need to be kept going, I think, is the thing. Yeah. Sorry, you were going to come on. I cut you across here. Did you say some other type?
So Darren Carty has a great piece on pneumonia in young stock in particular. So because it's been so mild all along, there's an awful lot of cases of pneumonia. And another issue, and I had in the management notes last week, is because it's been so wet. As we've mentioned, a lot of tanks have now filled up with water because water has got in through eaves and valleys, overflowing through those really bad downpours. So he's got some good advice there on how to keep water out of tanks.
Okay. And obviously, most of the co-ops have held milk price for October. They're set to this weekend, and the GDT lifted this week. So it's kind of put a bit of a floor in the market, you would say, in terms of milk price going forward for the time being. Anyway, the people will be delighted to see that steady in the GDT after a couple of weeks of downward pressure. So, okay, more good news. Thanks, Aidan. Thanks for that. Chat to you next week, folks. Earlier, as I said, Adam had a quick chat with John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. Let's have a listen.
John, you're very welcome to the show. Still celebrating down there after Munster's win on Friday night, I take it.
Wasn't it? Unbelievable.
will it turn around the season, I wonder, or because they've been having it tough, haven't they?
We've been not having it great, and you're very good to remind everyone the fact that you nearly beat us.
No.
I know, the Munster spirit is exceptional. Like,
it's brilliant, wasn't it? Like, it's games like that that really comes out, isn't it? Like, it's unreal how they could pull it out of the bag against South Africa. Yeah.
What the other three provinces want to have, Adam, really.
Yeah, exactly. look, I better get down to business. I suppose, I'm talking to farmers, and there's a lot of talk out there about silage quality testing and a little bit of talk about minerals as well, I suppose, and what minerals to feed. And is there many? I know on the dry stock out of the house, it wouldn't be that many as regards testing silage for minerals. Is that popular out there in the country, or should farmers be doing more of it, or is there benefit to doing that?
Yeah, definitely, Adam. Especially if you have suckler cows that are going to calve, and you're trying to put in a decent dry cow mineral, just to identify maybe what's missing, making sure there's enough magnesium available in that for the run up to the dry cow, enough iodine, phosphorus, you know. But really, by testing the silage, you understand maybe what you're lacking yourself, and that's really the key. You know, when we kind of give the off the shelf prescription of, oh, you know, this is necessary, it could be absolutely critical for your own farm there. In calving, Adam, but maybe, you know, it might necessarily be the same for lab low and Cork. But something that I think we might get a little bit better at is maybe testing for, you know, weanlings or store cattle as well, because we generally worry an awful lot. Maybe, you know, we talk an awful lot about silage quality anyways, whether we make good quality silage is another story. And we talk a lot about concentrate feeding, but we don't really talk about the minerals, and you can often see maybe mineral deficiencies in the farm. Cattle licking trucks or cattle licking the walls, licking urine even, you know, and sometimes they're susceptible to, you know, as well as poor thrive, stuff like ringworm, if you don't maybe have a full, I suppose, mineral program in place there to provide these, you know, immune supports and provide all the necessary functions. You know, they're very small things, they're needed very small quantity. So it's not going to be massive cost maybe to hang up a mineral lick there and make sure that they're covered, like.
You know? What should a good, say if I'm looking down the back of a bag or the back of a lick bucket or the back of whatever, what should a good mineral have? We'll say going to Dye Tuckler cows or a calf, maybe in February time. What should I look out for in terms of a good mineral?
Yeah, so you're looking at your macros, you're looking at having enough phosphorus, which is something that isn't talked about a huge amount, but that's key in mobilizing the calcium off the skeletal system, and enough magnesium there as well. And sodium is actually very important. And then when you go down into the trace elements, then you're looking at iodine, having sufficient copper and selenium, the whole works there, Adam. And then vitamins are actually very, very important as well. And that's something that I suppose the dry cow mineral space has evolved to include vitamins. A and D are very, very important as well.
It's important too to look at feeding rate. I know in the past, farmers would ring you up and they'd say maybe we'll be comparing on price, but when you actually delved into the detail, maybe one was being fed at maybe 150 grams a day, whereas another one was being fed at 100 grams a day. So you sort of need to weigh it up nearly on a daily cost rather than cost of the bag, because there can be different weights of bags as well. There can be 20 kilos and 25 kilos and stuff like that.
Absolutely, Adam. And even, when you look at, buckets and stuff like that, looking at molasses content, that's very, very important. And then on the mineral block side, equating all those back to each other. And thinking about practical stuff like feed space, very, very important. There's no bother saying, I'm feeding enough. But if cows are getting bullied and no one have access to feed, they can't actually get to silage. Ideally, you should be dusting that mineral if you are using a powder very regularly. So making sure that you have a supplement there in a block or something like that, to make sure that everything can get access is very important. And I suppose the thing about standard feeding rates is that it assumes that every cow is equal, and it's not necessarily the case, different genetics will have different requirements for minerals as well. It's not just as straightforward as that every single cow is the same as feeding. Like, you obviously try and pitch yourself in the medium to give yourself the best chance, but having that extra supplement there could be a good option for a lot of lads.
I said we're going around the country at the moment on our CAP series, and I suppose organics is coming up a lot for discussion. Yes. on those CAP meetings. A huge amount of interest there from farmers, and I'd say there will be a lot of people will go organic. As regards, I suppose, setting your place up before you go. People have this idea that organics is almost a lower level of management, and it's almost close the gate and let it go on. But you actually have to be, I'd say, a better quality, a better manager, or a better farmer to go organic than you do maybe to be not organic. It's very easy, I suppose, you're short of grass in May or June to go out with fertilizer and try and correct the thing, but can't do that in organics. It would be very important that you would have your soil fertility fairly good before you would go down that road, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, like Adam, and you see from your own coverage or the Tullamore Farm beef day that you did, or any local discussion group or farm work on organics, is this huge turnout. There's a lot of money there. It's very understandable. But if you look at maybe a conventional dry stock farmer, looking at what value are they getting from their fertilizer, and this is something that's very important. Obviously, we're a fertilizer company, so we're trying to promote the responsible use of nutrients, as well as hopefully selling a few tons along the way as well, Adam. If you take into account that only 12% of dry stock farms have optimal pH, P and K, and you equate them to the research done in Johnstown Castle, we are only getting 25% efficiency or recovery of the nitrogen that we're spreading at very high prices on 88% of dry stock farms if you use the national average site fertility statistics, which is absolutely frightening. And from an organics point of view, you'd have to question, does it make more sense for farmers from the fertilizer standpoint to go into that? Now, there's a lot more involved in it in relation to dosing and stuff like that. Maybe you probably touch on yourself, but like from the fertilizer point of view and nutrient input, that's not great value.
So I'm just trying to get that right in my own head. So you're saying if I go out and pay whatever 900 a ton for urea, yeah, that I have to multiply that on a typical dry stock farm, I have to multiply that by four almost for the real cost of that fertilizer, because it's not as efficient as it could be if I had my soil indexes right.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been going around all year and I've been saying, standing up at groups and saying, everyone in the EU has been paying €1,000 a ton for nitrogen for the last 20 years. And they stand back and look at me and say, no, wait, no, I haven't. I know I haven't. Yeah. But if you look at across any farm enterprise, you look at site fertility statistics, we know that the research is there. So like what we're doing is we're spreading nitrogen to get it into the plant to dry chlorophyll, grow grass. And what if you look at the recovery of that nitrogen that's applied, it's only 25%. So effectively, you're 100% right. The cost is absolutely astronomical. And listen, like we're trying to promote the responsible use of fertilizer. We're not encouraging anyone per se to go into organics. We have a few organic products as well. But like what we're saying is that get the basics right, you know, and it's simple things like that. It's a nugget that a lot of people took out of the group when you say you've been paying €1,000 for years. Because they say jeepers, and they start to think about it. We've all been harping on about lime for years, Adam, and maybe it's too cheap that, you know, if you can buy it for 20, 27 or 29 euro a ton spread, is it too cheap even, like, you know, that we don't maybe fully value what it's doing? But I think that, you know, we've seen the dairy lads last year maybe drove on with lime, and probably a lot of dry stock lads as well, Adam, to be fair, but we definitely know that there's an awful lot of room for improvement, and that's gonna lift your P and K as well as your pH, and you'll be in a much better place.
I suppose it's not just about, and I know, like, look at grass and agro, obviously in the fertilizer business, but it's not automatically about spreading P and K fertilizer. It's about utilizing slurry, it's about utilizing farmyard manure. You can build your indexes in a wide variety of ways, can't you? In terms of building those indexes over time.
So it's a fact, Adam, like, and before you go build an index, is get your lime right. You know, it's simple as that. Like, you know, forget about it. Just get your lime right and then start to think about building your indexes, because what's happening with phosphorus especially is it's getting fixed to aluminium and iron. It's getting bound in the side. It's becoming redundant. It's a waste of time. It's no good to you. You may as well throw it, the money down the drain. So get your lime right first is a real simple one. It's easy to do. You know, you'd often hear maybe it'll soften the land, Adam, but like that's been comprehensively disproven, you know, but it's probably one that, you know, from our from the west of Ireland that we get a lot, like, you know, that to buy the land or do X, Y, Z, it won't. But it's just getting out there and getting it done, really, and I suppose very, very important, because I suppose, Adam, when you think about the dry stock side of the house, like, and the pressure on derogations and you name it and stock numbers in this country, like, me and you, I think, would much rather see a reduction in nutrient input and keep our stock numbers.
Yeah.
But I feel that we're coming to a pass that is either going to be we reduce stock numbers or we reduce nutrients or else we do both.
Okay.
And it is very serious at the moment that we have to try and maybe get better at the basics and you know, adopt these technologies. And, like, lime isn't a technology per se, or, you know, when you describe
it's a really simple one, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like something new, though, like, you know, something fancy. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just going back to the basics, maybe what our forefathers did before us. Like.
Just finally, I suppose, on fertilizer, when we're talking about fertilizer, is there much talk out there about strategies, I suppose, around, you know, current prices? You know, we're hearing maybe fertilizer coming back at the minute on international markets, whether that follows through or not. Like, I suppose on Tullamore Farm, we sort of went with, we get a sort of enough to maybe do the first round and enough to do a bit of silage now and sort of have it in the bank as opposed to maybe panicking in the spring. But look, there's some dry stock farmers mightn't be in that position, I suppose, to do that. Cash flow is tight and there's other things to be spent on. But what's the general consensus out there on farms or what are people thinking?
Yeah, so I suppose it's very... you know, it's a very tricky one for us to purchase fertilizer as well. You know, you're dipping in for 300,000 or 400,000 ton of fertilizer, Adam, like, and you know, the risks are there. We're aware of that, but like what we'd be encouraging everyone as part of our site sustainability program is to purchase some for maybe your first round of nitrogen and some of your silage fertilizer, because the way it's gone, things are very, very volatile. So like we talk about maybe these slight reductions in gas price or whatever, but you're talking about a reduction from cow cuckoo land to, you know, somewhere where that's equally crazy as well. Like, you know, they're marginal reductions. And in the context of where we were when can was 300 a ton, you're talking 10, 15, 20 fold higher. So we're not talking about, like, we're talking about the difference between can being 1500 and 1300. Like.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
it sounds to me and you like, oh, fertilizer's come back.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But it's absolutely crazy. So I think 100% you need to secure something, because it's very risky. And because of the uncertainty, there's very little fertilizer in the country. And everyone's maybe worried that it'll come down. But if you can go to your merchant, co-op, secure a little bit, have it in the yard, that's very important. Provided you have cash flow, that's going to be dependent on your system.
Yeah.
No, it's going to suit some lads to do that. And other lads, it's a non-runner. But what I'd encourage the other people, maybe if they're, instead of maybe buying a ton of meal, which is about the price of a lorry load of lime, I go to lime every day.
Okay.
You know, if you take a 20-ton load of lime there, it could be $400 or $500. Probably buy you a ton of meal. I think the lime is the runner now this year, Adam, to be honest. But if you have maybe cash around, I'd definitely try and get out there and secure something. At least you'd have peace of mind that you'd be in a good position for next year, because supplies will be tight in the spring especially.
Right, folks. Thanks, Adam. Good to get the chat with John O'Loughlin once again this week. Right, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren, and Aidan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Shout out once again to our supporters, Grassland Agro, for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.